And welcome to Behind the Screams. As always, my name is Ian, and in today's show, I am joined by the rest of the Cackle crew. First up, it is Lindsay. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you?
I'm all right. How's your week been? Doing anything horrific this week?
No, just working. Which is horror in itself.
That's horror enough. Not breaking in any laws this week, no?
No.
We'll say no more. We're also joined by Lucy. How are you doing?
Oh, you sounded so enthusiastic there. Thanks.
That's just my voice. Leave me alone.
Leave me alone. Hey, ghoul friend. How you doing?
I'm all right. Is that your pun for today?
Yeah.
Oh, is that? That's so disappointing. Tonight, we're also joined by my cat, who normally stays away when we're doing recording, but she's very much making herself heard. Excuse me, can you
stop
that?
She's a co-host tonight.
Yeah, she's the fourth member of the Cackle crew. At this rate, she's getting kicked out, honestly. Anyways, yes. So, tonight, this is episode number 132. That number's getting awfully high, and we're going to be talking about Hotel Transylvania from 2012. And on that note, I'm going to put my cat out of the room. So used to talk about, like, Lindsay, this is your choice this week, so why don't you tell our listeners why you chose this movie?
Okay. So I picked Hotel Transylvania because I thought it was quite a fun, cute kids film. It's a lot about embracing things that are different and about like family relationships. So I thought that was a really good one to highlight in terms of like a kids horror film. And it's a really good introduction to all of your classic monsters as well. If you have little kids, I think it's really good for that as well.
I would agree. I mean, I'm definitely not a kid, but I've seen this before.
Yeah.
And I do enjoy Hotel Transylvania. I've seen the sequel, but I didn't realise that there's a third one and there's going to be a fourth one as well,
yeah.
Which is mad.
When I was like doing a bit of research beforehand, I knew there had been a second, but I couldn't believe there was a third and a fourth coming. I know we'll get into it later, but I haven't seen any of the sequels, but from what you guys have said about this film and what you've commented on the sequels, it's very much a mixed bag on the sequels.
I like the sequel. Spoiler alert, I like the sequel, but I've not seen that. I've heard the third one's a bit... I don't know.
Sorry, Lindsay, say all of that again. I'm really joking. I have some thoughts about this film, and I feel very much like I'm going to be in the minority when we're discussing this movie.
I was watching this earlier, and I'm like, Ian's going to be the grumpy old man of this episode.
Why? What made you think that about me? Because there's obviously a reason. No, aside from that, there's obviously something in this film that's made you think, oh, Ian's going to fucking hate that.
It's because it has joy. That's what it is.
There's...
Don't drag him too hard, Jesus.
There's no joy in this film. Anyways, shall we do the housekeeping? I think you've definitely broken, Lindsay. Let's do the fucking housekeeping and change the subject. Jesus Christ, Lindsay, your face is half a red.
Oh, no.
Anyways, you can find us on social media. We're on Twitter at ScreamsBehind. Lindsay takes over on our Twitter account every single Saturday and asks you some of your favourite horror questions and some horror trivia. Lindsay also does our TikTok. You've just released, four videos for TikTok or three videos for TikTok?
Yeah, I've got some more recorded, but I was meant to put them out earlier this week, but put the subtitles on the wrong one. I need to release a different one before that one. So, yeah, there's a few more coming before the week.
Anyways, there's a couple of new promo clips up there. You've also got another video up about Carrie trivia. So go check that out, Behind the Screams podcast on TikTok. I'm going to give a shout out to someone specifically on TikTok as well, who, like, posts really nice comments and really nice things about absolutely everything that we do on TikTok. So it's her tag is Sarah Marie Art Studio. And we just want to say a big, big thank you from all of us here at the Behind the Screams podcast for always saying such lovely things, saying that we're your favourite podcast or that we're the best podcast going. We really, really appreciate that. So thank you very, very much. But we're also on Facebook, Instagram and YouTube at Behind the Screams podcast starting from this Sunday. We're also going to have a little Instagram takeover, a little weekly Instagram takeover. And it's not Lindsay, because I know you've all had enough of her.
Savage.
So we've got our first takeovers from Lucy. Lucy's going to be in charge of our Instagram accounts from on Sundays moving forward, and you can all go drag her then.
Oh, thanks. Please be nice.
You've got some cool stuff planned, haven't you?
Yeah, there'll be some cool like story takeovers, and there's going to be like a weekly recommendation from me that's going to be horror related. It's not just going to be movies though, it's going to be like video games and TV and kind of like anything related to horror. So yeah, go check out the Insta on Sundays. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, definitely. Insta's like, that's the one I'm so shit at. Like, I'm so bad at Instagram. So yeah, you can do that. We're also on twitch.tv/behindthescreamspodcast. I stream there 3 nights a week. Dave streams on a fourth night. Not this week though, because we've got our live Q&A happening this week. Obviously, if you're listening to this on the regular download, this happened last Saturday. But if you're listening to this like on the Patreon, this is this Saturday on our Twitch channel at 7 p.m. UK time. Live Q&A, but we also play a whole host of video games. Yesterday, I completed Soma, I completed Observer, both amazing games that people should go check out. We're having a fun night of Dead by Daylight tomorrow, where I'm using this new thing called Dixper, which should be a lot of fun. I'm going to be playing this game called Canarium on Sunday, and look how bored Lindsay's getting just listening to this.
It's like the one part of the podcast that I just have like no part in. I'm just like, right.
You will on Saturday.
Yes, true.
That's true. And I've also been working on creating a little game show there for all of us as well. So some exciting times ahead on the Twitch. And finally, you can find us on Patreon, patreon.com/behindthescreams. Give a shout out to our Patreon subscribers at the end of the show. But you can sign up there for either £1 or £5, and you get a whole host of bonus content. This weekend, me and Nico are going to be recording our episode on Return to Oz. That'll also be released this weekend, and there's a whole host of other content there as well. So that's patreon.com/behindthescreams. Lindsay, where can people find you?
I'm at @HiItsLindsay_ on all social media.
Nice. Lucy?
You can find me on Twitter @Lulu_Pew. You can also find me on Twitch @Lulu_Pew playing Dreamfall Chapters at the minute, which is like one of my favorite kind of indie RPGs. And people have been really enjoying that, which has been good, and Dragon Age. And a little plug as well for the Hero Screams book that I'm involved in. It's going to be a published book in October, which has a variety of individuals in the horror community. Part of it, there's going to be a variety of essays, and we put a Kickstarter out this week, which we've already had halfway to our goal, which is mad, in just a few days. So thank you everyone for the support, because I know there's a few people that are listeners that have supported it as well, so thank you guys. And if you want to check out all the updates on the book and like the release date and all that kind of stuff and the topics, just find Hero Scream on Twitter and Insta as well.
Awesome. So that's where you can find all of us. Go and support us all. That would be fantastic. We would absolutely... I've actually started using my Twitter account this week. Like, I don't know if you have noticed.
I know, but
like,
I've been getting... noticed that.
I've been fucking active as hell, guys. Like, so yeah, you can find me, my personal Twitter account, @IanForrest12 with 2 R's. I finally am posting content that's not just most, it's still mostly podcast related, but it's not exclusively anymore. So yeah, go and do that. But are you ready then to get into this week's movie?
Yeah. Yes.
I'll take that excitement. Look at you were telling me about how unexcited I was sounding. Have a word with yourselves, the pair of us. This week we are talking about Hotel Transylvania.
Discover where they go to rest in peace.
Do not disturb.
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 Morning, Your Eminence.
Mate, clean this room up.
Welcome to Hotel Transylvania.
It's a place I built for all those monsters hiding from the persecution of humankind.
A place of relaxation and tranquility.
Hello?
A human?
What is this place?
Just a normal hotel, nothing going on here.
I'm terribly sorry. It's my mistake.
What is wrong with you people?
This movie was released in 2012. It was directed by Jendy Tartakovsky and stars Adam Sandler, Selena Gomez, and Andy Samberg. The IMDb plot, which I have magically deleted from my notes, so I'm just going to quickly plug... and fill for time for a couple of seconds while I Google it. The IMDb plot is as follows. Dracula, who operates a high-end resort away from the human world, goes into overprotective mode when a boy discovers the resort and falls for the Count's teenaged daughter. She's 118 years old. Like, is that what we're counting as teenaged?
I guess
that
so.
Sounds like their world.
Bullshit. I call bullshit. Okay, so this movie is part of our sort of Wednesday series, like little mini series of kid-friendly horror movies that we're doing. Obviously, last week we talked about Frankenweenie, and this week we're doing Hotel Transylvania. So one of the questions that I wanted to ask both of you, and then I'll open the floor up for you, Lindsay, to maybe take the first couple of points, because it's your film. Did you prefer this or Frankenweenie? I've got yous there. That's it. Good night. Mic drop.
It's a hard one because like this one is more fun. I feel like with Frankenweenie, as much as it's very beautiful and like there is still that like important message, like life lesson that they're trying to like impart on children, there's a lot of padding out done in Frankenweenie that is very empty, whereas I feel like Hotel Transylvania is a very full film. Like as much as it, some of it is filled with like poop jokes, which as an adult I was just like, oh god, not another one. Like it feels like a more complete plot, whereas in Frankenweenie there's a lot of like padding out to try and make it a feature-length film, if that makes sense. Okay. So I find it hard to be like, do I like one more than the other, because they're very different. Like they're very different films.
Yeah, I'd say they're very different films. Lucy, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna say Frankenweenie just because I love that movie. But I do get it though, because Hotel Transylvania, it's two totally different movies. Hotel Transylvania is a fun movie. It's a fun, feel-good movie, at least in my opinion anyway. I know we'll get into it. It's more of like an easy watch, I would say. Frankenweenie's more about the aesthetic, whereas this is more just a bit of fun. And the pacing of it is, you know, there's more going on, isn't there? But I have to say Frankenweenie, I stan.
Okay. Well, as you both know, like, I think the most down on Frankenweenie out of the three of us, wasn't I? I gave it the lowest score. And I prefer Frankenweenie to this movie. Like, you're right, they're very different styles of movie. They're very different they're very different takes on, obviously, similar characters. One of the big positives I said about Frankenweenie was that, you know, it really could help to bring some of these, like, universal monsters to life for a younger audience. And I can't not say the same about Hotel Transylvania, because, of course, if anything, it probably does it in a bit more depth as well. It's probably one of the biggest positives I can say about this film, because, obviously, in Frankenweenie, one of the criticisms we sort of levelled at it was that there wasn't really a lot of depth to... They didn't really delve into a lot of the characters that were there. Like, we didn't find out that the girl was a Van Helsing, like, right till the end of the film. And you know what I mean? Like, so, like, I felt like there was quite a lot of opportunity wasted with that. Whereas here, you know, we get a lot of Dracula and Frankenstein and the Mummy and the Invisible Man, and they're all, you know, spending quite a lot of times on our screens, even if we're not necessarily delving too deep into their characters. But I think this movie is just a bit too much for kids for me. I felt like with Frankenweenie, there was enough in there as an adult that I could still enjoy it, and I didn't really feel like a lot of this movie was directed towards me. I think as a kid's film, if I was a kid, I would probably fucking love this movie, and I think this movie is probably better for kids than Frankenweenie is. But as an adult, I prefer Frankenweenie to Hotel Transylvania. So... that's so it's 2-1. Sorry, Lindsay.
That's fine.
So you chose this movie this week. So do you want to sort of, is there anything like you want to take first dibs, any points you want to bring up, any sort of direction you want this conversation to go in? Like, what would you like to bring up first?
It's hard to think.
That's because there's nothing to say about this film. Yeah. We've just said it all. We've just said it all.
No, it's a good film. I like it. It's really funny.
Okay, do you want me to talk about one of my real bugbears about this film? Right. So, I have this thing where films have, like, a really contemporary music number in it. And this film has, like, loads of them, and it pisses me the fuck off.
Well, it's set in the 21st century.
I bet it bugs me. It bugs me so much. Like, I don't even know why. It makes my eyes roll. Lucy, you don't need to put your hand up to make a point.
I was going to say there was one song that came on, and I immediately thought of you, because I immediately imagined you rolling your eyes.
It was the LMFAO bit.
Yes, it was. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. He's gonna hate that.
I hate it.
When Drax, like, it's stealing my soul. I'm like, me too, babes. Like, that's such. Even though this film is only like 9 years old, like, LMFAO is such a dated record.
It is. They had what? 21. They had two songs.
Yeah, what was like there that, two? Yeah.
There was Party. I don't even know what it's called. Is it Party Rock Anthem?
Something like that. Yeah.
And they had another one. I'm sexy and I know it.
Yeah, that was the song that
they
were playing, wasn't
it? That's the song that they were playing, yeah. So, yeah, like, that just made me roll my eyes so hard. I don't know if it was... I get what you're saying, obviously. They've brought it forward to the 21st century. They're maybe trying to modernise that a little bit. They're obviously trying to appeal to a younger audience as well. But for me, this... And then the several other sort of musical numbers we got from our characters throughout the movie, it's just a bugbear of mine. It's like, I just hate it. I hated it at the end of Shrek 2 as well, when they all started singing Bonnie Tyler. And you guys know, I'm a man who loves my Bonnie Tyler. But, like, I just hate musical numbers in movies that aren't musicals.
All I'm getting from this conversation is that you just hate Joy.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to stand on that soapbox till the day I die. The ending of Shrek 2 is great. You're wrong.
Okay. No, okay, maybe I do just hate Joy.
Well, there's, like, what, 3 music artists in the cast? Like, they couldn't not have singing in the film.
There's CeeLo Green, there's Selena Gomez.
And, well, Andy Samberg.
Oh, of course, The Lonely Islands. I always associate him with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, best TV show on Netflix. I always forget that he's got in the Lonely Island. I know, like, but don't you think it was overdone? No, just me? Am I, like, really bad?
I feel like at any point it was, like, inappropriate because...
I thought they were like... all inappropriate.
Obviously, they were doing like the band audition for the party, and then there was like the singing at the party. Like, I mean, it's normal to have a band at a party and to audition the band for the party. Do you know what I mean? So it's not like they just like shoved it in. I know in some films they'll like shove in musical numbers for no good reason, but I feel like they made sense plot wise, and as well, like, especially when Johnny Singh comes in and starts singing with like all the other monsters, it's to kind of show that Drac really needs to shake things up, and having this like new energy in the hotel and in amongst the monsters is a positive thing and not a negative thing like Drac would have you believe. So it makes sense plot wise as well.
Okay. Can we just note with Johnny that he can are we all in agreement that Johnny is the resident himbo? He's the definition of a himbo. I love it.
I fucking hate Johnny so much.
I love him.
No, he's so annoying. He's such a fucking douchebag. Honestly, if I was Dracula, I wouldn't want him anywhere near my daughter either. Like, I got serious fucking dude chills. Douche chills, not dude chills. I got serious douche chills from that fucking guy. Honestly. Anyways, maybe I do just hate Joy. I don't know. I'm starting to question myself now at this point. Wait, let's talk about the storyline then. Let's talk about the plot. What do you make of the plot? Because here, obviously, we've got this story. Dracula's raising his young daughter. She's 118. His daughter Mavis. And he's sort of kept her cooped up in a sort of traditional fairy tale kind of way, hasn't he? Like, he's warned her from going out because the humans are evil, and yeah. So, and then obviously she goes out to this village, blah blah blah, and we continue on. So what do we make of the sort of setup of this movie, where specifically I'm really sort of talking about the scene where we get introduced to all the various different characters, because it's probably one of my favorite parts of this film. What do you think of this opening scene, Lucy?
I like it. You know what, we were talking, funny that we were talking there about Shrek. Hotel Transylvania to me kind of is like the spooky version of Shrek and Monsters, Inc. I know that sounds really weird, but see that first scene when you... I know, give me a minute, I'm getting to it, okay?
They're both spooky films.
Wished. But when we get the scene when we meet all the monsters, I love that as well. But it kind of, the comedy and like kind of the slapstick humor of it kind of reminds me of Monsters, Inc. When you meet all the monsters at the factory, it gives me that kind of vibe. I really like the setup, like you say, we get to see a lot of the classic B-movie characters. We have Frankenstein, we have the Invisible Man, there's Werewolf, there's the Fly, there's the Mummy, like there's loads.
There's tons, I really like there's that. Tons of them. You've also got like Missing Link, Creature from the Black Lagoon's in there somewhere, like, and there's a huge amount more as well, like, there's just... to elaborate, sorry.
No, there's loads, but no, I really liked it. I thought the plot's like... for a kids movie, it's quite original. Like, I don't know, it was a fresh take on, you know, the genre for kids, I think. Okay. I don't know what you guys think.
Lindsay?
I kind of loved that they were all like, you know, like the dad crew, like you see like that group of friends, like middle-aged guys, and that's just them, like they've been friends for years and years and years, they like all their wives and stuff are best friends as well. So I thought that was really cute, because from a kid's perspective as well, it's like, well, they'll probably see that, and they'll be able to see their parents in these characters. So yeah, I loved it. I loved all their introductions as well. There was just like, I don't know, it was just so typical of like friends meeting up who haven't seen each other in ages. I loved it.
This is definitely probably one of my favourite scenes of the movie, because this is... I feel, and we'll talk about it as we go on, that a lot of the sort of humour in this movie is a bit forced, and a lot of the jokes are kind of a bit forced in there, and whatever else, because apparently I'm a joyless bastard. But this, just like you're saying, Lindsay, it feels very, it has the sort of feeling of like a big old sort of like either like family meetup or a friendship meetup where you've not seen each other for a really long time. I really like the different ways we get introduced to characters and the little jokes in there. Like, I like the fact that, you know, Frankenstein gets himself mailed to the hotel, and I love the fact that the big bad wolf is, I know all the characters have names, but I didn't get all the names, so they're character names. So I love the fact that the big bad wolf is just this like really sleep deprived father throughout the entire movie, and to the point where he's just not the big bad wolf anymore. Like, later on we find out that he can't, his nose doesn't work anymore, and it's a little bit sad actually.
This guy is so fucking fertile, I wouldn't even want to make eye contact with him in case he got me pregnant. How does he have so many children?
Lindsay's like, hold up, this vagina is reserved for Gomez Adams.
Yes.
A wee reserved sign, just.
I love that we're speaking about a kid's movie, and in the first 5 minutes, we're already speaking about vaginas.
Bet, you think we've only been going for 5 minutes? we're 25 minutes into this motherfucker right now. So.
Oh, damn.
I always feel bad. Like, I really feel like we need to put... I know I always put the wee explicit sign up for all of our episodes, but I do feel like I should put an extra disclaimer when we're talking about one of the kids' films. Be like, "This, please don't let your kids listen to this, because we will not be kid-friendly." Remember, I tried. I tried to be kid-friendly when we were doing Adam... Was it Adam's Family?
Yeah.
And that definitely went out the window, Lindsay.
Very quickly. Hey, don't blame me.
It was all about you. It was all about you. But no, I agree with you guys. Like, I really do like this scene. You know, when we're getting introduced to all the different characters, and I liked kind of trying to spot characters in the background. Like I was saying, you know, you can see that there's Missing Link, and you can see the creature from the Black Lagoon, and there's a whole host, and obviously you've got like skeletons and giant spiders and witches, and I like all the various roles that they have. Like, I really love the shrunken heads as the do not disturb signs. Like, yeah, they're hilarious. I love the witches on their brooms being the maids. You know, so like, I do like and the zombies, you know, just being like the waiters and things like that. Like, so I really love the roles that they sort of find for them all. Although picking the female characters for a role in doing the maid, so sexism at its finest. it's just like, yep.
Yeah, true.
I've forgotten what I was going to say there. That's so, so good. So anyways, yeah, like, that's my favourite scene. What I was wanting to sort of move on to, and I know I'm sort of jumping around all over the place, I want to talk about cast, right? Because I have... My rats are going mad. I have an issue with the fact that, you know, this is obviously an Adam Sandler joint, which of course means that all of his friends are in this movie. You know, we've got Kevin James, we've got David Spade, we've got a whole host of others as well, who, once again, have completely escaped me. Obviously, we've got some other people in there too, but I just... If you don't like this cast, and I don't know how you guys feel about, you know, Adam Sandler, Kevin James joints in the general. I know they both have the odd good one here or there. I'm personally generally not a big fan of them, so that kind of puts me off straight off the bat. So maybe that's another reason why I wasn't feeling the jokes quite as much. I wasn't feeling the joy quite as much, because I was going into this just being like, oh, you know, I was just feeling a bit downtrodden about the cast. How does it make you feel? How do you feel about these guys and their movies anyway?
I do get what you mean. Like, it's a shame with Adam Sandler, because he has made like such good films, but you do get that feeling whenever you see his name attached to something now, and it's just like, oh, it's gonna be shit. Like, we're past the point where it's like, oh, it might be good, and you just automatically now assume it's gonna be shit.
That way with like Nicolas Cage for a while as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I do totally get that, because like, it even makes you think as well, like, Netflix have given him like a 6-picture deal, and you're just like, why? But it's that glimmer of hope, because he has produced like some amazing comedies. So you just put all your eggs in that basket, being like, maybe he'll do it again one day.
I mean, the guy does have good films, and he does have a few good, like, serious films as well. But there's just, like you say, I think the name, for me personally anyway, the name's just been tainted so much with so much dross over the years that you're right, I cannot look at any movie that has Adam Sandler as the main star, top billing, and get any sort of excitement about it. I've heard loads of people say that Hubie Halloween that came out at the back end of last year was actually quite good. I've still not watched it just because it's been right down at the bottom of my watch list, you know? So, Lucy, how do you feel about these people?
Well, I mean, I've never forgiven Adam Sandler for the atrocity that was, what was it, like Grown Ups and Jack and Jill, and it was just a steaming pile of shit. But, like, I do get it, though. Like, I definitely in the 90s, like, made great movies. I'd seen this movie before. When I'd first seen it, I hadn't realised he was voicing the Count, because I don't notice these things. But I would get it if you were looking into this, and, like, it's that kind of meme thing, isn't it? And Sandler's a bit of a meme now, kind of like Nicolas Cage was, and you're like, oh, it puts you off. But, like, give him his due, so I think he's actually pretty good in this, you know?
In fairness. I was going to say that, like, I think the cast are great in their roles in this. Like, I can't really fault them.
No, I'm not, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not criticising them so much for this film, because I do think that they all do a pretty good job. You know, I'm actually a big fan of, like, Andy Samberg, so when I see his name attached, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, cool, like, I really like him. It's funny you say that, you know, it gave you Monsters, Inc. vibes earlier. Steve Buscemi is in this film. He, of course, was Randall in Monsters, Inc. as well.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Buscemi plays Wayne, and I don't know who Wayne is.
Wayne's the wolf.
He's the wolf.
All the characters have, like, names that begin with the letter of what they are. So the mummy is Murray.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's a nice touch.
That's smart. So, apart from Jonathan...
Well, Jonathan's a human.
Is he? I totally get, like, and I feel like as well, you like, I like the fact that you can't automatically tell Adam Sandler has this sort of, like, Adam Sandler voice, doesn't he? You know, when he uses things like Waterboy and Little Nicky, and, you know, films where he's not really talking properly, and it's, like, the same voice for every single film. So it was kind of nice to not just not have it sound like Adam Sandler for this film. But no, like, I think the cast did a good job. But to me, when I see all those same names listed, it automatically just puts me on the back foot when it comes to a movie. And of course, when I see, you know, CeeLo Green's name listed, I'm like, oh, no thanks. Don't be giving me anything to do with him. So, yeah, Lindsay, have you thought about what you wanted to say yet?
No, I'm kidding. one of the things about this film that I thought was quite interesting is that the guy who directed it was actually really heavily involved in Cartoon Network. Mm-hmm. He, like, produced, directed, wrote, like, Samurai Jack, Dexter's Laboratory, The Powerpuff Girls, like, so much classic content that I just ate up as a kid.
Cartoon Network just hit so differently in our childhood, didn't it? Like, Dexter's Lab was, like, for me,
Courage,
like,
the Cowardly Dog. I grew up with that. That was my favourite.
Yeah, like, there's so many great cartoons that aren't aired anymore.
No. Like, Dexter's Lab used to be on Netflix, and that used to be, like, what I would watch when I came home from a night out, like, with my chippy, just grabbing handfuls of chips.
Is it sad, right? Because I can go one better. Is it sad that possibly, like, I'd say a decade ago, but I'd be lying. Probably about 5 or 6 years ago, when it was still on Netflix, I watched all the classic Thomas the Tank Engines that was voiced by Ringo Starr, because that was my absolute favourite, like, growing up. When I was, like, 4 or 5, like, I was in love with Thomas the Tank Engine. So I rewatched them all as, like, a 24-year-old.
Oh, bless. I tried that with the Rugrats, but I just couldn't get into it again.
They're bringing, like, Rugrats back.
They're bringing it back, right? Normally I'm, like, totally against that, but I just think Rugrats is so good, and you just, there's so much you could continue to do with it. Like, Rugrats could never end, and you could just, like, refresh it for every next generation.
I don't know, though. Like, I've got the image now of the woman who voices Tommy Pickles, is because she's been in a lot of Rob Zombie films.
Oh, shit. So,
like, my image of her has just been, like, completely destroyed. Anyway.
Another thing I was, like, thinking about when I was watching this film, maybe this is me going into, like, boring adult mode, but I think it's really interesting the way they... Hotel Transylvania is, like, a safe space, but the characters are very fear-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And how I think that's, like, a really good lesson for kids, because, like, Drac is so fucking, like, anally retentive, like, control freak, must plan everything, like, down to the letter. Like, you see Mavis's party, the way he's planned it, and it's the most boring fucking thing in the entire planet, because he's so terrified of change, like, oh, everything's fine and safe like this, and we can't ever change it. So that's why, in, like, some ways, I thought there is kind of a message in there for parents as well, because I do think sometimes, like, some parents want to wrap their kids up in cotton wool, and it just doesn't really do anything that good for your kids.
It doesn't do anything good for your relationship with your kid either. Like,
no.
If you do this, right, because there are definitely parents out there who are super, super strict and, you know, don't let their kids do anything. And obviously, we're talking
It's all out of a place of love. Like, Drac does this from a place of love.
But
it's not good for Mavis, and it's not good for their relationship.
No, definitely not. Because, like you say, all that's going to happen is your kid's going to end up resenting you for not letting them go and do... And like I say, obviously it's within reason. Like, you don't want to go and let them go do something illegal or you know, anything dangerous or things like that. But there are certain things, like, you just need to let your kids go and do and find out for themselves. Like, you know, like, the situation... Like, I remember when I was little, like, doing stuff that I probably shouldn't have been doing. Not, like, bad stuff. I'm talking, like, as a toddler and things like that. And I remember, like, my family being like, oh, it's fine if he falls and hurts himself. Well, you'll learn not to do it again next time. You know? Like, and that was kind of how you learned how to do things. And there you do kind of have to... I mean, I'm talking here as a person who has no intention of ever having a child of my own. But, you know, I'll let my cat go out and do things. I
think it's funny that you say that, because also, like, you're the youngest, and, like, my nana will tell me stories about, like, how my mum brought me up when I was, like, really teeny tiny, because I was, like, I was the firstborn, and my mum would, like, freak out if I got dirty or anything, like, immediately changed me, and my nana, like, raised three children already, would be like, clothes wash, it's fine, and my mum would be, like, completely freaking out. So I can kind of see that in Drac, obviously, like, Mavis is his only daughter, so... It's like the first one's like the practice one. All the other kids, it's just like, well, that one didn't die, so this one will be okay.
And confirm
it. Doing that,
and so look how you turned out.
I confirm, as the youngest of three at that point, my mum was just like, oh, she didn't die, so it's a success. There we go. Yeah. She's made it past 18. It's a job well done for me.
She made it past 18. That's fine. I can... You're the world's problem now.
what I was gonna say is, like, I agree with the point you made, Lindsay. There, it's a good movie for kids, but also for parents. Because in terms of, like, other kids' movies that have the same kind of premise, where, and it's usually a woman, is locked up in a tower, and, you know, they get to break free. You don't always get to see the parents' perspective of it. Usually, it's, you know, especially with the princess movies, it's they get let out. You don't really see the parents, or the parents have died and they're still locked up, or something along those lines. So to actually see the parents' perspective and see Drac kind of do a switch near the end and realize, okay, I need to kind of let go and let Mavis be who she is, I thought was quite nice, because we don't always get that in kids' movies. Usually the parents are kind of like a second thought.
Because, like, well, Drac's the main character, really, at the end of the day. So he's the one that goes through the journey. Because I think one of the other things I noticed is how, like, switched on Mavis is. She's very emotionally mature. Like, you know, later on in the film, she kisses Johnny, and then he's like, oh, I'm a human. Everything she's been told her whole life is to hate humans, and she goes, I don't care, like, I still like you. That shows, like, a lot of maturity, and to not like listen to this like fear-based teaching that she's had from her parental figure and like all of the other people around her, and still just go, I like you, I'm gonna go with this.
And I mean, like, obviously here that's humans and monsters sort of getting together, but you can transfer that to so many situations in real life through, you know, gender and race, you know, and things like that as well. It's so applicable. So yeah, I think it's a great message, you know, like if someone, you know, it doesn't matter where someone's from or who they are or, you know, those sorts of things. If it's right, it's right.
Exactly.
What I wanted to bring up there as well, though, I must say, Dracula does have good reason to hate humans.
Oh no, definitely. I think it's explained really well, but I think that's an important lesson too. Like, I've had, it's like not tarring everyone with the same brush. Like, I've had friends say to me before, like, who've maybe lived in foreign countries, and it's like, oh, a certain type of person did this thing to me, so I hate all of them now. And it's like, but you can't tar everyone with the same brush. So as much as like he has every right to be traumatized, he can't put that on all humans.
One
and at the end of this film, I was like, Draken, you need some therapy, you need some grief counseling.
One thing I did like, though, is like, because you were talking about how it was a lot of it was based out of fear, and obviously he lost his wife because the humans were scared of Dracula and scared of what they, you know, his abilities and things like that, and he could have retaliated out of fear in terms of destroying them all and taking over the world, and instead he chose to make a wee resort for monsters. Like, that's kind of cute.
Yeah, definitely. Like, out of something tragic, he decided to make a safe space.
Yeah, and I think how much better would the world be if, you know, everyone who went through something like that made a safe space or made something that was going to be beneficial to other things. This person had something horrendous happen to him and thought, you know what, I'm not going to let that happen, or I'm going to do my bit to not let that happen to anyone else. And like, that's kind of heroic.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't even drink human blood either. He has a substitute. So he's like, he's never intentionally harming those that, yeah,
he says because it's fatty, though. He says it's because it's too fatty.
Yeah, but still, if he was a vengeful bitch, he would do it anyway, you know, just to be spiteful.
Because he even says at one point, like, oh, I can't kill him. It'll, like, put us back hundreds of years.
But that was the thing.
He knows it's the wrong thing to
do. But that was one of the things about the plot that kind of bugged me. If Jonathan had went missing, right, who would have known? He was on his own. He was like, he wasn't with friends. Obviously, we assume he's got family somewhere, but.
Yeah, well, he says he's got six brothers.
But who's going to link it to the monsters? They don't even know they're fucking there. No one's been to this castle, this hotel for 100 years it's been on the go for. Like, they could have just killed him.
True, but it's not very family friendly, is it? Wouldn't have much of a movie, would you?
How many people? How many things died in Frankenweenie? It's literally a movie about dead things. but no. So I think the overall what we're saying there, you know, there are some good messages in this, you know, and messages I think as well that aren't always talked about in other kid-friendly films. You know, kid-friendly films tend to be, you know, be nice to your fellow man, and you know, which is all very well and good, but they're sometimes a bit basic, aren't they? I think this film does do quite well. It may be going a little bit deeper with those messages. So yeah, I guess I'll have to give the movie a little bit of kudos for that. But that'll be the last time, okay?
One of the other things I've picked up on the film was, like, they keep talking about the way, like, humans smell. Like, they smell different from monsters. And it made me kind of think about how when people use, like, microaggressions against, like, people from other countries, other races, smelling different. So I thought that was, like, kind of a unique way to, like, introduce that rhetoric and kind of be like, you know, you shouldn't really say that about other people, or, you know, just because somebody's, like, different, doesn't mean it's they're bad.
I mean, you should never really comment on the way someone smells at all. No, because
grown-ass adults will be like, yes, smells like curry.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I don't think you should ever comment on the way anyone smells, ever, because you don't know what the fuck's going on in their lives. You don't know what their home situation is, you know. So I just think that's something that, you know what, if you don't like it, just fucking grin and bear it. Like, who fucking cares? Like, this person's just trying to get through their everyday life. You know, like, we all know, like, as well, like, specifically around people who are having mental health issues and things like that, one of the things when you're not doing too great with mental health that goes right out the window is personal hygiene. So it's not even just a case of saying, well, it's about people of different cultures as well. I know that's what it's specifically going for here in this film, but yeah, if you're taking it into a wider context, it could be for a whole litany of reasons, from cultures, from, you know, literally like financial resources. Some people like are so living hand to mouth that they maybe can't afford to wash their fucking clothes quite as often, you know. Like, it sounds ridiculous, but this is how people live their lives. Like, so people are so, you know, living hand to mouth, or it could be a mental health issue. So I just think smell, like, commenting on someone's smell is just, I find it really elitist.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, treat others how you want to be treated. And you know what? If you've not got anything nice to say, just don't say anything at all. It's really not that difficult.
Yeah, so fuck all you elites. I'll smell how I want.
All right. I was going to make a note there. Doesn't Johnny actually make a note about racism at one point?
Yeah.
With Frankenstein.
I couldn't remember if it was Frankenstein or Dracula, but doesn't someone say something to him, oh, like, well, humans aren't allowed, or we don't let their kind allowed, or something like that, and he's like, well, that's kind of racist.
That phrase is used, like, so, like, Dracula uses it all the time, like, their kind, mm-hmm. and it's like, again, that's like another, like, racial, like, well, it's typically used with racial microaggressions, but I guess it could be used against, like, LGBT people as well. Like, I could hear it, I have heard it being used that way as well before. So there is all this, like, microaggression language being used, and it's been brought up in a kids film, but it's been shown to be bad, like, straight off the bat. So I think that's good if, like, kids can hear, know, and recognize these things, and hopefully, like, when they get older, they're, you know, they know to call it out.
Yeah, definitely. Like, again, you know, that is one of the things that this movie did really well, I think, was, you know, go and talk about...
Oh, more compliments!
It's the same compliment that I gave it. It's the same compliment that I just gave it, like, 3 minutes ago. Calm your tits. No, it is. It is one of the things that this movie did well. You know, give credit where credit is due. You know, it would have been, I think, really easy for them to just make another kids film and make it all... I know we said there are some in here, but make it all fart and poop and shit jokes. And, you know, they didn't really do that. So no, hats off to them for that. Let's talk about then some of the humour, because I've already said that I felt that some of the comedy, some of the jokes that were put in throughout this film felt a little bit forced, and, you know, I don't know, it just didn't sit quite right for me, some of them. Like, they threw in a couple of, like, slightly more adult jokes. Like, when, is it Invisible Man gets his shorts pulled down and he's like, I was in the water, it was really cold, or something like that, you know? And, we all know from watching them back, for most of the kids' films that we watched when they were younger are actually fucking littered with just the rudest fucking jokes in the world. How do you feel then about the sort of mix between humour for kids and humour for adults in this film?
I didn't think it was ha ha funny. And there are jokes in there that you're kind of like, oh, roll your eyes. But the one thing I kind of liked about this is there's some pretty good pop culture references. There's like one point where Johnny says something like, a guy was trying to like eat me at a gig, it was a Slipknot concert. I fucking loved that. And there's like the scene near the end where you know, Drax chasing the airplane when he's a bat, and there's Twilight played on the screen on the flight, and he's like, and this is how we're represented. So
Dracula has every fucking right to be raging.
I mean, I still stand Twilight, but even I agree. But I thought it was nice to have those little nods in there as well. I don't know, like, you're not going to go in this movie for something that's profound and it's going to have really funny humor for adults. But like, as an adult, like, I don't know. I kind of enjoyed it. It's just lighthearted fun. I don't know what you thought, Lindsay.
I think the people who make these films, like, know that they kind of have to get the parents on board somewhat, because they want to make a film that the kids are going to watch, like, over and over and over again. So they have to put in something for the parents, who inevitably have to be there while it's on. So yeah, I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, like, we've got adult jokes in Pixar and The Simpsons and lots of cartoons.
I mean, The Simpsons is arguably just a cartoon for adults, come on. Sure. But I didn't have an issue with the fact that they threw adult jokes in there. I was just more asking how you felt, like, about the balance, like, and if it was effective comedy. Because, like, I'm with Lucy, like, there was no... Here I go, the joyless bastard. I did not laugh out loud once while watching this movie.
I can just imagine you sat there story based, like, why are we watching this?
So grumpy.
You know, but you know, when we were talking about Frankenweenie last week, I did say there was a few moments in that movie, even though it wasn't my favourite movie of all time. Like, obviously these films aren't necessarily purely for me, so they're not going to be at the top of my fucking list. You know, there was a few moments of that movie that made me laugh out loud, and even with silly things like the dog poo, the cat poo, sorry, and, you know, Frankenweenie wagging his tail off and that, like, that, they made me just sort of go, but I never got that at any point in this movie, even at these sort of adult jokes. What made you guys laugh out loud? Did you laugh out loud at any point?
The Twilight reference made me laugh, I have to say.
Okay.
Yeah, same.
Was that it? Was that it? Was that the only point you got that line? Because they're sitting there calling me joyless.
I enjoyed it the whole time.
But you didn't laugh at a comedy.
I can't remember. I literally just finished watching it.
I think you need to with a comedy, though. You don't have to be absolutely bursting at the seams, pishing yourself laughing, you know?
No, absolutely not. But, you know, like... surely if you're watching a comedy movie, you should still be able to pick out the things that you find particularly amusing. There should, even if you don't physically laugh out loud, especially if you're watching something alone, because we all know that comedy is a very social thing. Like, you'll laugh, you're more likely to laugh at things if you're with someone, but even then you're still in your head going, oh yeah, that was really funny. Yep, okay. So let's talk about then the sort of resolution of all of this, because obviously, or no, actually, let's talk about what Dracula did first, because Dracula agrees to let Mavis go out on her own into this sort of local village. You know what? Hawiwi made me laugh.
Yeah,
Hawaii-fi. Hawaii-fi. But he lets her go to this sort of like local village to sort of test it. It's almost like a sort of dummy run, isn't it, for her going out into the big wide world. And it's a fake village that he's set up, and he gets all the zombies to dress up as humans and basically chase her out the village so that she'll never want to leave again. What a dick.
Yeah, like, this is so fucked up. Just to lie on that scale to anyone, especially your child, is so messed up. Like, the idea of, like, her just going to a village and then coming back for 30 minutes, like, that's a great idea because she's never been outside before. And, like, of course, having a little, like, test run's a good idea. But then he makes this whole fake village. And what's even sadder is that she's such a nice girl that she's just stood there. They're all on fire. She just wants to help them. And she's just like,
oh, fuck, that's
I
a
don't
second
know
bit
what to
it.
Do.
Fuck, I like that bit as well. Fuck.
See, there
when
you
one
go.
One of them stabs the other one.
He, like, threw the face with, like, the pitchfork.
Just dead eyes, dead inside. Well, literally, but...
And they're all just...
None of their mouths are moving, and they're just like, burn the candy! Just, like, it's so weird.
Drac has some serious attachment issues, though. Like, to go to that extent, like you're saying... Hen needs some CBT therapy or something, because...
He does!
I mean, like you say, like, we've obviously admitted that he has every right to feel wary about, but, you know, this takes it just... There's a line, isn't there? And he's crossed the line. And I think it was important, though, for the purposes of the story that he did do something that crossed the line. So I feel like they adequately did that here. So I want to talk about the sort of resolution we've got at the end. I want to talk about this scene as well, where all the monsters realize that the people kind of worship them. Because they go to this real sort of village that's nearby, and is it Monster Fest they're having, or something
Monster
like that?
Monster Fest.
And they're all dressed up as Universal Monster characters. Like, there's so many people, loads of people who's dressed up as the Mummy, and there's people dressed up as Frankenstein. There's nobody dressed as the Invisible Man, I must note. That poor guy. But I don't know, this was probably for me like the most kind of heartwarming moment of the entire film, not the actual resolution at the end, because this to me was very much kind of like how I'm sure you guys have maybe felt this as well. Like, I don't know, like, obviously Lindsay, like, you were never a big horror fan, so I don't know if you've had this moment as well, but like, specifically when I'd like started this show up and things and sort of being welcomed into the community and things like that, and it's just like that discovery that there's people out there like you. Obviously these people aren't quite finding people like them, but they're finding people that accept them for who they are. And there's something heartwarming about that.
Yeah, like, it was a little bit before that. I felt myself tearing up when, like, Drac was, like, everyone's, like, hates Drac. And then he's like, we have to go and get Jonathan because Mavis loves him. And then they're all like, yeah, let's go, like, it's for Mavis. And I was just like, oh, they all love her so much, and it's so cute. And they just go to this village. They're going to go against everything they've ever believed in to go and get Jonathan for Mavis.
Not just everything they've ever believed. Not just everything they've ever believed in, but Dracula's out in the sun.
Yeah, he's out in the sun as well. And it's just, oh, it's so adorable. I really start crying.
How did this scene make you feel, Lucy? I think I can tell.
it warmed my heart. And, you know, I kind of want to touch on as well, like, the whole everybody coming together. It's like when we talked about some other movies where there's unconventional families. You know, Drac is now a single dad, but all the monsters that are in the hotel are Mavis's family. So it shows that, you know, you're not defined by blood or anything. They're kind of all her parents as well. And they all kind of come together to, you know, to help her and to get Johnny. And then when all the humans as well are like pulling the sheets over so he can run through, I was like, oh, that's so cute. Like, my heart.
Very much so. Before we get onto the sort of final scene, I want to talk about an issue that I do have with this movie. I have a big issue with the fact that they keep saying, oh, well, you only zing once. And that
annoyed me a bit.
That's just not true, people. Like, you can love more than one person. Like, I don't know, like, I feel like for all the good that this movie's done, I feel like I think that's a really problematic message to send to people. Because I think it forces people to think that they need to stay in potentially in situations that aren't good for them or are toxic and things like that, because they believe, oh, well, there's only one person for me and it was this person and we had that moment when we first met and knew nothing about each other, you know? And I just feel it's a bit of a problematic message to send out there. How do you guys feel about it?
I mean, like, you're not wrong, but
I know.
I don't know. The romantic in me is like, oh, I believe in love at first sight. Like, I just don't think it'll happen to me.
I feel like...
move on quickly.
We can have a therapy session if you like.
No, we've already gone an hour. We don't have time for that shit.
I think the sing thing is cute, right? I think it's cute. The love at first sight thing is cute. Oh, wished. Yeah, I know you don't say anything, but I can see you shaking your head. Wayne Shite. But it's cute, okay? But I feel like in the book, so we should probably preface this, like, Mavis's mom, who's passed away, for her 118th birthday, she has this book, and it's about, like, the love story of her and Drac. But, oh, okay, well, let me finish what I'm going to say first.
No interrupting.
It's really sweet until that you only zing once. I think if they took that line out, and it was just about the zing or whatever it is, I would have been fine with it then, because it is cute. It's just that whole, it only happens once, and if you get it once, and you got to grab it because it's your only chance, you know.
Yeah, because Mavis is then of the impression that she's never ever going to find someone to love her because she thinks she zinged for Jonathan, but he didn't zing back. And that's it. That's it for her life. She's just going to spend the rest of her life in this hotel. And it's bullshit. Also, can I just say, by the way, if I'd waited 118 fucking years for a present from my dead mom, it better be something better than 3 fucking sentences written on a shitty piece of paper. All right? Like, bullshit. I'd be raging. Fuming. I'd be fuming.
Your love language isn't sentimental gifts, then, we can see.
It is not. Lindsay, what do you think of this?
Like, as an adult, like, I understand more about, like, falling in love with more than one person, falling in love with more than one person at the same time. Maybe a lesson on non-monogamy and polyamory is not appropriate or too much reconciled, but
I just don't think, like, you need
maybe
it.
If they changed it to something about taking chances, because that's what it really was. Like, Mavis had this connection with Johnny. Drac basically scared Johnny away, and she felt like she missed her chance with Johnny. So if it was maybe more something about, like, seizing opportunities rather than it being, like, very love focused or, like,
I think that's the
this
issue.
This is all of your life and that's it. Maybe if it was more about, like, just seizing the moment.
I think that's the issue that I have with it. It's so focused on love. And like you say, obviously, there are loads of people out there who live in non-monogamous relationships or polyamorous relationships, and that's absolutely perfectly, as long as everyone involved is happy with that situation and that's how people want to live their lives, then absolutely all for it, 1,000,000%. But that's not what they're saying here, and I really just have an issue with it, because I think it's problem. I think you're right, Lindsay. I think if they changed that message and made it about, or Lucy, I can't remember which one of you said it, about taking chances or, you know, something along those lines. I think this is the one case in this movie where they got the message really, really wrong. So, yeah, that kind of left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth, because it's the kind of like one of the messages that's sort of interweaved throughout the entirety of the film as well.
Because Mavis does take a chance in the sense that, you know, she could very much be like her, you know, Drac wants her to stay in the hotel forever. And I think, you know, we'd said earlier, Mavis is very intelligent and she's definitely her own person, very strong-willed, which I think is really good for kids to see, especially young girls. You know, she takes a chance in the sense that she's not going to stay in her dad's shoes and she wants to break away from that and get in the outside world. So that would have fallen quite nice with that narrative and her character arc, because she is such a strong character. For her to then be like, oh, if I can't get Johnny, then who am I on my own? And, like, this is my only chance. So it just felt, it left a sour taste, you know, because up until that point, she's been her own person and she's not been defined by her dad. So she shouldn't also be defined by Johnny, you know?
Yeah, because, like, she kisses him at the end of the day. She, like, sees him. She's like, I want a bit of you.
You know what? See, if she had said that, I would be rating this like a fucking 9 out of 10 just for that alone. Like, I so wish that they got to that part and she was just like, here you, come here. What a piece of you. But no.
Yes.
But no.
Come
see,
Mavis.
We just do things very differently here in Scotland. Yeah. Right, let's talk about this final scene then before we get on to final business. So, you know, Jonathan's flying away somewhere. Do we know where he's going? I don't know. Is he just going home?
They don't ever say.
Did they not say? I couldn't remember if they said or not. And Dracula decides to chase the plane, despite the fact that it's causing great physical harm to himself. He's trying to chase the plane as a bat, and then they have this sort of non-conversation through the window of the plane, and he takes over. He hypnotizes the pilot and leaves this message and gets them to turn around and go back so that Jonathan and Mavis can be together. What do you make of the conclusion? How did you feel about the conclusion to this film? Did it leave you all warm and fuzzy inside?
Yes, it did. Like, I think it's good for Jack's character arc to know that he can still love Mavis without, like, being so overprotective of her. Like, he can let Mavis spread her little bat wings and like everything's gonna be okay, really. So I liked it.
Lucy?
I really liked it as well. And there was a line that he said that I thought was really sweet. It was something along the lines of, you know, I always thought I would hate to see you go, but I hate more seeing you unhappy. And yeah. I want you to live your life. And I think that's really important for parents to hear, but not just parents, actually anyone in general, you know, like if people let people live their life and learn to let go.
I think that's a good thing in relationships as well, not just from parents to kids, like in relationships with other people. I'm sure we've all at some point stayed in a relationship that's not working long enough, like, and been unhappy in that relationship. And, you know, you've maybe not wanted to let that person go, but you've realized, you know what, it's probably best for them as well. Rather than seeing each other become miserable and things like that. I think most people probably been in a situation like that, right? So yeah, I get it doesn't particularly leave me all warm and fuzzy inside, but that's because I'm a cold-hearted bastard. You know, Mad Dracula's the Prince of Darkness and should remain that way. But I get for the purposes of this film, like it's all nice and warm and fuzzy. So it fits the purpose. Even though, you know, it doesn't give me the fuzzies, but that's just me. Anything else then that you, because that's basically it. I know we've not really gone through it scene by scene or particularly chronologically, but that's kind of the movie, isn't it? So anything else that you guys want to talk about or anything else that you want to bring up, anything that I've not covered?
One of like my only real bugbears about this film is kind of like the lack of female characters in it. Like we have Mavis, obviously, and then there's Eunice, who is annoying, and that's it. And then there's Wayne, the wolf's wife, whose name I can't even remember. Don't even know if she
does. She have any words? Her name's Wanda.
Wanda, that's it. But, you know, I watched this film like twice this week. I couldn't remember her name. And her character is pregnant and nice. And it's just like, we have all these characters. You could, like, these two characters could have been developed a little bit more.
Well, it's funny.
And I think as well with, like, we were saying about how Mavis is so, like, switched on. Like, she's obviously probably had a lot of influence from these two women. And their characters are really, really flat. So
it's funny, because beyond those three, the next highest credited female character is the role of the Shrunken Heads, who is played by Linnell. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Linnell. She was in Borat. She's the prostitute that he hires to come to like the fancy party. So that's who voiced that. So you're right. Like, there's really not a lot of female characters in here, and I mean, Eunice, you're saying, is annoying, but she barely gets any dialogue or script. In comparison to the others, like, I know she gets things to say, but if you look at it in comparison to the others, she doesn't. And then obviously Wanda, even less, like, she says just a couple of things, I think, if at all.
Well, like, there's a joke with Eunice, like, something about being loud while she's increasing in volume, and it's just like, oh, what I'm taking from this is that the directors and writers want me to think she's really annoying. And, I mean, her voice is quite annoying, but it's just like I kind of just more felt sad that there wasn't more of a developed character.
Yeah, like, as well, you know, because the character Eunice is played by Fran Drescher, and she had made a comment that every single time they went in for a reading, the directors told her to make her voice more high-pitched, more annoying, more gruff, more this, more that. So they were clear what they were going for.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's these caricatures of female characters. You know, we've got the wife of the wolf, who's a caretaker, who's just taking care of all the kids, and then we have the annoying loud woman. And it's interesting we speak about this because we also had this in Frankenweenie, with the mum, who gets like no dialogue, and there's very few female characters, and they're not given really a voice.
And in Frankenweenie, that's Catherine O'Hara as well, and you're like, what a fucking waste of this just incredibly talented woman. Not saying that Fran Drescher is not an incredibly talented woman, but Catherine O'Hara is like iconic. An icon.
Yeah, and I think especially with Hotel Transylvania, it's not as if this movie is just trying to be a kid's movie. We've already spoken about that it has messages there. It kind of touches on things like racism. It in a way for kids, it touches on things about attachment styles and letting go, you know, all the stuff we've talked about. So it's not as if they couldn't have had strong females in there as well to kind of show that message as well about female empowerment. And I think it's important for kids to see that, especially young girls. So it's disappointing, you know. They talk about not having these kind of things like racism, but then they have these caricatures of women. So it's a little bit, you know.
Yeah, it's like, it's typical. Like, you think, oh, you do good things one way and that makes it like great for this representation, yeah, whilst completely forgetting about this group of different people, more than half the population of the fucking planet, you know? So yeah, like it's a little bit hypocritical, really, isn't it? Like, and it's not just this film. This is in almost every single film that's ever been made, you know? So there's definitely elements of that in there. Okay, anything else then that you guys want to touch on? Have we covered pretty much everything that we want to talk about? How do you feel, actually, last thing I want to talk about, how do you feel about the animation style? Because obviously we talked quite heavily about the animation style of Frankenweenie. Did this one hit as memorable for you? Because it's Sony Animation and they want each of their animated movies to have its sort of own style. Did this one do anything for you? Was it like particularly memorable or not really?
I mean, I liked all the character designs, but it's obviously like not as unique as Frankenweenie.
Yeah. Like, I mean, for me, this one's just not really going to stick in my mind. Like, I wouldn't watch another film and be like, oh, that looks awfully like Hotel Transylvania. Like,
yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, if something looks like a Tim, like we were talking about with Frankenweenie, if something looks like a Tim Burton film, it looks like a Tim Burton film, you know? Lucy, what do you think?
I think, like we were saying earlier, this and Frankenweenie are two completely different films. If we're going to compare, I definitely prefer Frankenweenie in terms of the aesthetic, but that's not to say the animation in this isn't good. I think that the character design is really good. I think the set design is also really good. I think the hotel itself, like there's lots of little set design pieces and little nods there and posters, and there was like looking at the trivia, there's a lot of little notes there to classic horror movies and stuff, which I think is important to note. But it's not like say, it's not, you look at it, that's a Tim Burton movie, or even Pixar, you can usually pick out what a Pixar movie is. This is, it's not, I don't know, it doesn't have that trademark stamp where you'd be like you say, oh yeah, that's Hotel Transylvania.
It's just a bit forgettable for me, really. Like, and I don't mean that as a criticism of the film, because obviously it's not really the actor's place or anything like that to be worried about character design, unless obviously it's being like particularly offensive or something like that. So, you know, that's more a comment for me on the animators rather than the film itself. So it's just a little bit forgettable. Okay, well,
I will say the bats are very cute. When they transform into bats, okay. Mavis is adorable.
When she's giving
him
the big sad bat eyes. Yeah, I will give you that. Like, she is very cute at that moment. Okay, right, if that's everything then, let's move on and let's talk about some trivia. We'll start off as usual with the finances. Right, this is going to blow us away, because we were blown away by Frankenweenie having a really big budget. It was like 30 odd million, right? So this movie had a budget of $85 million. Worldwide, Jesus, at the box office, though, grossed $358 million. Dollars. Am I just not seeing what the entire rest of the world is seeing? First off, $85 million for a kid's animated horror film is just mind-blowing. That's mind-blowing money.
Is that all going to Adam Sandler?
Because there's some big names in the cast.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, a lot of that is going to be contract negotiations.
I'm sure a lot of it is contracts. Like you say, Steve Buscemi's in this, you know, Kevin James and David Spade, and Selena Gomez probably took a big chunk of that herself as well. So I just read that and I had to look like twice. I was like, that must be a misprint. It must be like 8.5. But no, 80.5. I was blown away. And made 4 or 5 times its budget. Like, that's huge money. Why did this do so fucking well? This is trash.
It's a good film, yeah.
No, it's not. Like, when you think, when we looked back at Frankenweenie, Frankenweenie didn't do that well. Like, and I just think that's a better movie.
I think that's, like, people hating, though, on, you know what people are like, oh, it's in black and white, I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah.
Do you know that way?
Yeah.
Like, people are like that, or with subtitles as well. Like, oh, I'm not going to watch it, it's in subtitles.
Yeah, no, I get that.
You watch the TV with the subtitles on all the time, just watch the damn movie.
I can't watch TV without subtitles these days.
Well, I won't, and it really, I think we talked about this before, I'm so fucked off at Prime that half the stuff you rent does not have subtitles. Mm-hmm. Like, it's atrocious.
It was really difficult for me a couple of weeks ago when I had to review Martyrs and I couldn't get subtitles for it, and I was like, that's fucked. I couldn't understand anything that was going on. Anyways, so in this movie, Dracula, who of course is played by Adam Sandler, his wife and Mavis when she's an infant, they are voiced by his real life wife and daughter, Jackie and Sadie Sandler. So nothing like a good bit of nepotism there to thingy the blues away. Sadie Sandler has actually got 19 acting credits, and 18 of those are starring or produced by Adam Sandler, and the one that's not was made by David Spade. So, like,
get that family connection, you know?
These people just are movie machines. Like, they just put out so much shit. Like, I'm sorry, but David Spade, Kevin James. Like, I know Kevin James did Becky last year, and I've not seen it yet, but by all intents and purposes, that's actually a pretty good horror film. But they just produce so much crap. Like, I think that's a universal thing. I don't think I'm alone in thinking that. Anyways, the character of Dracula, according to one of the head animators, I couldn't think of the word I was looking for, was drawn, I need to stop slamming this table, was drawn as a tribute to the legendary Dracula actor, my words, Bela Lugosi. So he was designed after Bela Lugosi. Miley Cyrus, she was initially cast to play Mavis, but was fired after buying her then boyfriend a penis shaped cake and was photographed licking the cake. It made the studio nervous about her leading a family friendly movie after she was shedding her Hannah Montana persona. What a crock of shit. Just let her fucking be in the film.
She was an adult at the time as well when that happened.
We have all done things in our life that is not family friendly. Some of us have done things that are really not family friendly. Like, we've all done things and have got, like, drunk photos. Like, it's just ridiculous. She was licking a cake.
Miley Cyrus is another person that, like, a lot of media really needs to apologise to. Like, remember when she done that cover for Vanity Fair? She was 15.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, she was a child. None of this would have been her idea. And Annie Leibovitz, who is obviously one of the most famous photographers in the world, photographed her topless. And Miley was the one who had to apologise for it. She was 15.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous. Like, she is one of these people that's just so vilified by the media. Like, please touch wood. I hope this never happens. But it's the classic story, isn't it? Of someone being bullied to extreme mental health issues, to suicide, to these sorts of things. Like I say, touch wood. I wish it would never happen. I hope her all the best. But it's just ridiculous the way media gets away with treating people. This is abhorrent. Like, obviously, she's not on the same level in terms of fame, but it reminds me of, like, the whole Caroline Flack thing as well, and how she was treated by the media. And, you know, how many examples of this sort of thing could we pull up? Like, countless. countless examples of young women being demonized. Meghan Markle is another one.
Yeah.
Demonized and mistreated by the media, both in the UK and in the US.
Megan Fox as well. It's mm-hmm. this complete juxtaposition of where the media will sexualize you from an incredibly young age. Like I remember when that happened. I even remember like there was photos released of Miley, like there were leaked photos. I think she was in like a bikini or something like that. Nobody, like, she had to apologize for those photos, even though those photos got leaked. I'm pretty sure she was underage. And it's this juxtaposition of people will sexualize you, but also if you are seen to be, you know, being sexual in any form and shedding this child-friendly persona, you're vilified for it. Yeah. So you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. So I can only imagine, like, you can't win either way.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I don't know about you guys, but like, there's definitely some shady photos of me doing some bizarre shit out there.
There's probably photos of group nights out. You have been with me shady. On
nights out. You know what I get up to. That made it sound so bad. It's not that bad. but yeah, no, we're absolutely right. So this is one that I found quite interesting, because I did pick up on this in the movie. The hotel has a strict no humans policy, yet both Quasimodo and the Invisible Man are both human.
Yeah.
Quasimodo's just got a hunchback, and the Invisible Man's just a man who took a potion and has become invisible or took something, so... Yeah, there you go. Breaking their own rules already. And Quasimodo has the fucking gall to be like, you're a human. There's another human! I hate Quasimodo so much in this fucking film. Fucking hate him.
Hunchback of Notre Dame is one of my favourite Disney films. And Quasimodo is Quasimodo is what he is in the film. And Esmeralda's a fucking rat that, like, is really mean to people. Just like...
The rat is called Esmeralda as well.
Yeah, it's called Esmeralda. Yeah. I wasn't happy about that. And also, as well, this is, a prolific thing in, like, children's media anyway, but the very anti-Semitic design of Quasimodo as well.
Like, well, I felt like there was that with Eunice as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was a sort of twofer there. Quasimodo was played by John Lovitz as well, who I believe is Jewish. Okay.
I'm not entirely sure.
I believe he is, although I might be mistaken. But, you know, you were talking about shady trivia last week about Tim Burton and Winona Ryder. So here, how about this? John Lovitz, who plays Quasimodo, said he based the character on Julia Child if she was an evil man and short with a hunchback, but still French.
What a dick! The audacity, the gall, and the fucking gumption.
Like, that puts Tim Burton saying that Winona Ryder is a shit singer into, like, pales in comparison to basing fucking The Hunchback and Notre Dame on someone.
What the fuck did Julia Childs ever do to him? Like, oh my god.
Oh dear. The original Bram Stoker's Dracula was released in 1897, which is just 1 year before, according to the movie, the Hotel Transylvania was opened. So the story of Dracula would have been written about him. And, you know, because they obviously talk about in the movie how the legend of Dracula, well, whilst he's busy, you know, making this hotel, the entire world is reading Bram Stoker's Dracula, which might be, like, why they fall in love with him. Why they idolize him, you know? So maybe a reason for why the people... Because we never actually get an explanation for why the people love them.
Well, yeah, because Johnny turns up and he knows of Dracula.
Yeah. So, definitely. Last piece of trivia that I have. This is, going back to the money, Sony Animation's highest grossing movie ever.
What other animations have Sony made?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that and I didn't look it up.
trying to think because I don't know off the top of my head what other
stuff
they've
made.
Yeah,
I don't have a way to like gauge how good that is.
So they also did Hotel Transylvania 2.
What's up?
They did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, Open Season, they did the Smurfs movie, Surf's Up, they did the Emoji movie, the Angry Birds movie, Goosebumps.
So not the best lineup, eh?
Arthur Christmas.
Oh, I love Arthur Christmas.
I knew there'd be one, you'd be like, ah. They did Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
That's amazing. Have you seen it?
Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to quickly check up the finances on that one. Because I would have assumed that that one might actually beat this one. Because you'd think, with it being a Spider-Man movie. So, no. What did I say? It's fucking close. That it pretty much made the same money. So, very, very similar. I think there's only a few million in it. So, there you go. Any other pieces of trivia, then, that either of you guys looked up? I know sometimes, Lindsay, you'd like to look it up yourself.
I have one.
Oh, of course you do.
Of course you...
Go on, then.
Anyway. There was one that I thought was quite nice for any Zelda fans out there. And I've been trying to find this specific fucking tree, but I'm gonna have to look back and find it. But basically, during one of the sequences, you know, when you have the forest scene where they're like, oh, the big scary forest, one of the trees has a spider web, and the spider's body looks like a skull, similar to the Skulltula monsters from the Legend of Zelda games. That was kind of cool.
There you go. As a gamer, because I know, Lindsay, you probably haven't either, but as a gamer, this is one of my things. Like, I've never played a Legend of Zelda game.
Get out.
Lindsay's like, I aren't, and Lucy's like, you fucking dick.
I can just see Lucy's like face just drop.
I think that's gonna be I think I'm gonna have to be streaming those for the next wee while.
Oh yeah, you're not getting a choice in that. You are going to play Zelda.
I just remembered of one other bit in this movie before we move on that made me lol. And it was the screaming skull wake up alarm clocks.
I need that because sleep through my alarms.
When he was just like, I didn't order a wake-up call, and he's like, ah! He's like, there is no snooze! Ah! That made me laugh. But
the poor wolf, like, he's like the dad, his eyes are slowly going to sleep, and then it goes off, he's like, fuck's sake. And then they're all howling.
We've all been
there. Yeah, definitely.
Anyways, that'll do it then for trivia. Let's move on to the ratings and our final thoughts. So this is all, like, we'll start off with the critics like we normally do, but this has been clearly very polarizing. So IMDb have scored this movie 7.1 out of 10. Metacritic, though, scoring at 47 out of 100, with the Rotten Tomatoes critics scoring at 45% rotten. We're not playing the game today, I'm just going for it.
I was just going to say.
Shit. The Rotten Tomatoes, I forgot, sorry guys. The Rotten Tomatoes audience scoring at 72%. So
that's all over the show.
It's way all over the fucking place. Oh, I'm raging now, I forgot about the game. The critics' consensus is Hotel Transylvania's buoyant, giddy tone may please children, but it might be a little too loud and thinly scripted for older audiences.
See, critics, when it comes to, like, kids, though, sometimes it's just, they're like, oh, it's not perfect. Of course it's not. It's for fucking kids. Like, oh, there's just poop jokes. Like, oh, shut up.
I feel very attacked.
So you should.
Right. Let's do it, then. Lindsay, then, on that note, do you want to go first? What are you rating Hotel Transylvania?
I think this film is tons of fun. I think there's something in it for adults and children, and it's just an easy watch. So with that being said, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Interesting, interesting. This is going to be, I think we're going to be all over the place. Like we're saying the critics are. I think we're going to be too, Lucy.
Probably.
I really enjoyed this movie. I think even as an adult, I can appreciate it. It's a feel-good movie. I think it's a really good movie for kids as an introduction to horror. I know we spoke about that with Adam's Family, spoke about that with Francoweenie. I think this is good for really, really young kids. Like, they're one of their first kind of horror movies, if you will, because it is really family-friendly. So on that note, I'm going to give it the same rating as Francoweenie. I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Check you with the wee half scores. I think there are many other movies that are far superior to this film. Like, I am not a fan of this film at all. Yeah, I know we were saying there's a couple of bits that made me laugh and it's got some good messages in there, but I'm just not a fan of this film. It just didn't sit right with me. And I was, Lindsay, that image you had in your head of me sitting there very stony faced while I was watching this movie, that's how I watched this movie. Like, I was sitting there, I was just not amused. I was not amused. It just didn't do it for me. Like, it didn't tickle my pickle at all. Like, I would much rather watch Frankenweenie. I'd much sooner watch that. And, you know, this is not high up on my, like, high up on my animated list of movies as well. You know, like, I'd much rather watch Monsters, Inc. So with all that being said, I'm going to upset you guys. I'm going to score this at 4 out of 10.
That's so harsh. That's so uncalled for.
I'm entitled to my rating, thank you.
That is absolutely savage.
That is ludicrous.
I don't like the film, what can I say? Do you want me to rate it high, even though I don't like it?
Yes.
That's not being true to me. I must be true to myself. When we did Frankenweenie last week, overall, Frankenweenie's score was a 7.3 out of 10. Hotel Transylvania, given our scores and the critic scores combined, scores 5.9 out of 10.
My God, that's so low.
It puts it in 64th place of the now 99 movies we have covered on the show. Friend of the podcast, David from the House That Screams podcast, he gets the 100th movie. We're going to be doing Night of the Living Dead, so he gets the 100th. So you guys don't even get that. But anyways, it puts it in, like I say, 64th place. It gives it the exact same score as Cabin Fever.
I haven't seen that.
Okay. For other reference then, it puts it one place above 30 Days of Night and one place below Wolf Creek.
30 Days of Night? I'm sorry, get the fuck. That's a much better movie.
Wolf Creek is also a far superior movie. It's in with movies. It doesn't deserve to be where it is. It should be lower.
Shut your hole.
I love pissing you off so much. It's like my favourite thing to do.
I know.
You're the joy stealer. That's what it is.
I know. Total fun sponge.
I'm sponge like that.
I'm trying to think if I've done like any good horror comedies in this. I'm not sure that I have, to be honest. I think they've always been suggested by other people. I'm the person who suggests things like Martyrs and Eden Lake and
Friday the 13th Part.
Hey, that was hilarious, okay? Listen, just keep remembering the scene of the guy falling backwards down the stairs in his wheelchair. There you go.
Oh my God.
That'll always set you off, Lindsay. That'll always set you off.
Oh, funny though. It's such a long flight of stairs.
Stop it, we can't have all this high-pitched laughter. No, someone will give us a 2-star review.
No, it's the perfume for me. The yeast infection for me.
Oh, we're gonna get BV head, stop it.
Stop. Right, stop. We're not doing the fucking greatest hits of 2021 here, right? We need to do the listener thoughts. So let's get into what the listeners think. As always, we throw it out onto our social medias, ask you guys, the listeners, what you think of the movies we cover, and then we select, you know, 3, 4, or 5 of your suggestions and your opinions, and we read them out on the show. So this week, Shiv Shines said that she just watched this again. Loved it when it came out, love it now. Original, fun, good music, and great comedic timing. It's not really original, is it?
Aspects of the story that are very like paint by numbers, but I think it's like a cool concept for a kids film.
Okay. Chris Newman on Twitter, good family movie with something for everyone. Nothing for me, Chris. I think this is just the way I need to do it from now on, just be shady about every single person's submission.
As if you're not shady to begin with.
Yeah, but even exactly. more so. The Cinema Roulette podcast said story was a bit by the numbers. But the fast-paced animation and the humour really saved it for me. Friend, not just friend of the show, friend of all of us, Nick Adams on Facebook, he said, it's brilliant. The sequels are just as good too. You're on your own there, Nick.
Your own, like, you're the only one who hates the
I think you'll find most people hate the third one.
I don't know, like I say, I've not seen the sequel, so I can't say, but this the first one's good. I like it. Okay. I would watch it again.
We'll finish off then with equal number one fan Galileo Jones. She says, I love it, it's so funny and clever, I quote it way more than an adult should. Absolutely fantastic movie. I want to know what she quotes. Like, yeah. I didn't particularly find, like, no offence, Galileo, we love you, but I didn't particularly find anything in this movie, like, memorable enough to even be quotable.
Yeah, I can't think of one either.
And that's me being shady about you, Galileo, just dragging you there as well.
He's going to drag you online, and I support it already.
That's fine.
Oh,
That's fine, I've got the block button. But that's going to do it. Thank you to everyone who submitted an opinion. We'll have it up again next week when we cover our next movie. So thank you. Thank you very much. And that's going to do it for this week's show. Lindsay, where can people find you on social media?
I'm at @HiItsLindsay_ on all social media.
Cool. Lucy?
Find me on Twitter and Twitch at @Lulu_Pew.
Awesome. You find my personal social media on Twitter at @IanForrest12 with 2 R's, but you can find the podcast on Twitter at @ScreamsBehind, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is at Behind the Screams Podcast. We're on TikTok at Behind the Screams Podcast. You can find us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Behind the Screams Podcast. And finally, we are also on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Behind the Screams, where you can sign up from as little as £1 a month. Before we finish, big shout out to all of our Patreon subscribers, starting off with a new subscriber. Thank you so much to Martin Yankov for becoming a Patreon subscriber literally this morning. Thank you so much for doing that. We really appreciate it. But also a big shout out to Graham Barbridge, Lorna Pearl, Nico Ross, Girl That Scary Podcast, Coyote Wildfire, the TGIF Podcast, Galileo Jones, Boomer, Sophie Hodson, Claire Lusher, Carrie Johnson, Slayaway Radio, Leah, Lee Brash, Dustin, and Dustin Wurtenbeger. Thank you to all of you guys for supporting our show. We really, really appreciate it. I got through that really fast. I'm so proud of myself.
I know, I was like, sending you telepathic messages to breathe. No, I was getting concerned.
No, I don't need to breathe. It's fine. But that's going to do it. Next week on the show, we're back to my choice. I think it's the last one of like our kid-friendly series. We've been doing more as the year goes on, but this is like the last one of this little series. So it's my choice, and we're moving away from animation, finally. We're going to be talking about 2019's Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Have you seen it?
No. It's just come on Netflix, though. And when I first like saw like the image and stuff for the film, I was like, this is a kid's film? Because it looks quite scary.
Well, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, it's like, I feel like it's like Goosebumps.
Yeah, like, I would say so.
With the stories, there was a book. It was books and volumes of books, so it's a bit like Goosebumps.
Ah, right, okay.
I went to the cinema to see it.
Oh, did you?
Like, because you know,
checks you.
There's nothing weird about going to cinema to see kids' films.
I go to the cinema by myself to see kids' films.
I like your nods.
If that's not creepy, I don't know what is.
sitting up there, probably with your popcorn.
Oh no, I don't buy food at the cinema. It's too expensive.
Okay. It's daylight robbery.
I know, yeah, it's good.
I just sit in the back right corner on my own, as far away from everyone else as possible.
Mood.
But yeah, that's next week's episode. So yeah, please check that out. Check out last Sunday's episode as well. We had the wonderful Sophie back on the show again. We were talking about Lake Placid, which was a joy to talk about. Any opportunity for me to talk about Betty White is welcome, because I absolutely stan for Betty White. And like I said, we've also got David from the House That Screams podcast coming on to talk about Night of the Living Dead, the original 60s film. So we're going back. People asked us for more pre-1970s stuff. Well, there you go, a movie from the 1960s. So lots and lots of other movies coming up. But until then, thank you once again to Lucy and Lindsay for joining me. Thank you to everyone for downloading and listening to this episode at home. And we hope you will join us next time on Behind the Screams.